Welcome to Livable Launch, a podcast dedicated to telling you what new home projects are launching and giving you behind-the-scenes access to the people creating them. I'm your host, Matthew Slutsky, and today we're joined by Rob Spanier, a master of placemaking and the visionary leader of the Spanier Group. Rob has dedicated over two decades to transforming places into vibrant, engaging communities across North America. Today, he'll share insights on new home community launches and his strategic approach to developing environments that not only attract, but also connect and inspire their inhabitants. Join us as we delve into the principles of creating dynamic, prosperous communities with a true sense of place. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thank you for having me.
Rob, I've known you for a long time. You are a fascinating person in the industry that really covers some niche parts of the market. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. And it's great to be having these discussions. I think we're having them more and more in the industry. For the last 20 plus years, I have focused on almost exclusively mixed use development, even before it was a term. But my specialty, or at least my focus, has been on the ground floor 50 feet up. What does that mean? Some people say retail is 14 feet, 20 feet. Sometimes you have two-story retail. I think about where people live on the street versus where they sleep upstairs or where they work upstairs. My practice, our company, has been focusing on helping developers, cities, governments to create vibrant and successful ground floor experiences with a whole host of uses that are financially viable.
So where does that history come from? Why don't you talk a little bit about your IntraWest days and what you were doing there?
Sure. Well, my history comes from growing up in Montreal, which I'm very proud of. And Montreal is a really European city in its design and sort of the idea that everything is 5 to 10 minutes away. Grew up in a neighborhood where I'd walk down the end of my street and I could get to the bakery, I could get to the fruit store, bank, bus stop, and even the grocery store, the Steinbergs of the Montreal era. And that really had an interesting effect on me of having neighborhood experiences close by. I joined IntraWest in 1999, knowing very little about real estate, but really knowing about place and not even realizing I did. And IntraWest at the time was a very, certainly the preeminent resort developer around the world, in Canada, the United States, Europe, and the Caribbean. And I was hired to join a team and started a team that focused on the retail asset, the ground floor.
Can you tell us a little bit of what these places they were building are? Because I think they're household names to most people,
sure.
They may not know what you're talking
about. So if you're in Ontario, Blue Mountain, if you're in Quebec, Mont-Tremblant, if you're in British Columbia, Whistler, Squaw Valley and Mammoth in California, Copper Mountain Keystone in Colorado, a project outside of Vegas Strip, Lake Las Vegas, Mountain Creek in New Jersey, Stratton in Vermont, and even a project in the Panhandle of Florida called Sandestin Golf and Beach Resort. And even I lived for a year and a half in the French Alps, a project called Les Arcs, which is in the Savoie region. And so IntraWest had developed this model of creating destination resorts. And the fundamental of the destination resort certainly was locating close to a natural advantage, whether it was a body of water or it was a ski hill, and IntraWest was known for skiing. The village was the environment that allowed them to sell hundreds of millions of dollars of real estate. And what did that village consist of? A whole host of great restaurants, retail, service shops, and public spaces for people to hang out and gather. And the number one element or fundamental principle of IntraWest was, how do you get people to stay for one more day? And so you'll hear me say a lot, either in podcasts or in projects, how do you figure out the 100 things to do at a project? It's not just about, I bought a condo, I went to get a coffee at Starbucks. What are the other 98 things to do in a community? Whether it's sit at a park, go to a school, go for a workout, buy some clothes, have a great meal with friends, go to a dog park, do a yoga class. There are so many things that are experiences that we have in our lives that we're so, we forget that they're important in our lives. And over the last 50 years, people have been so disconnected. I'm going to get in the car to buy a quart of milk. I'm going to get in the car and drive the kids to school. Oh, now I've got to go to Costco. I've got to go here, there. But if you can actually create the essence of a place, which is a mix of uses, you actually can have a better overall quality of life.
Do you need that? When I think about those destinations you named, the hook for those destinations is, let's say, the mountain, if you're talking about a ski place. But then these things turn into their own elements. Like, I always hear about people going to Whistler who don't ski. They want that feel. You know, we try to go to Blue Mountain once or twice every year with my family, and you nailed it. We're always like that one extra day. Like, it's just so enjoyable to be there without even the skiing. It's just such a great village feel. How important is that hook? Or is that, without that hook of the mountain, is that what you've now taken to these developments and communities that are being built?
I think the fundamental principle that Joe Hussein, who was the CEO who started IntroWest, was we're going to build around natural advantages that are within 3 hours of a rubber tire market, meaning you could drive there easily to create the experience. What has happened in the last 30 years is that these places have evolved from being just a resort or a destination to a community. So Mont-Tremblant, I grew up in Montreal. Saint-Javite, which was the small town outside, kind of like Collingwood would be the outside town of Blue Mountain, is now called Downtown Tremblant. People go and move to the Mont-Tremblant region to live there because it's a lifestyle. They don't just go there to go skiing and have a condo and try to make an investment and a return. Same thing is happening with Collingwood. You saw a lot of that happen during COVID, but certainly now people are choosing to locate closer to the Blue Mountain region because of the infrastructure that has been invested there. And I even remember going up and talking, doing a panel up in the Collingwood area, and people were complaining that the industry had left their marketplace. They no longer had manufacturing. They didn't have good jobs. And they were chastising me for the village of Blue Mountain. And I said, I've helped to put people into business, like Copper Blues, which is an amazing restaurant. Dustin Lesham and his then wife and his sister started that business. It's been, I think, 24 years now. They have hundreds of employees. They've made families. They've been able to support an economy, not just create a restaurant so you could buy some French fries and have a beer after the day of skiing.
And so, taking that to your experience now, like, who hires you now and what do you do for them?
Sure. So Spanier Group is a real estate development advisory firm, and we focus on helping these types of projects. So who hires us? We work with large-scale developers. We're working on a project called Lakeview, which is in Mississauga. We're working on a project called Downsview, which is the Downsview Airport redevelopment with Northcrest. But we're also working with clients like Green Park, Mattamy, developers of what I call vertical neighborhoods. It could be one or two or three towers, which has become the norm now. Very few people do you see building one tower on these sites because we have a housing crisis in Ontario. And we focus on helping them in several different ways. If it's a project that has a great developer, we focus on the ground floor. How do we maximize that asset for them? What does that mean? We focus on ensuring that that retail or that mixed use box functions well, has the right ceiling heights, has the right back of house. How does it deal with servicing? How does it deal with loading? How do we maximize the economic return for the developers? Because many developers today are doing mixed use, and many developers have no other choice because municipalities won't accept anything less than that. So making sure that that asset performs for them is key. They work with great teams. They have great development teams. They have great architects. We step in for a period of time to assist on that. In other projects like Lakeview, we've been involved since day one, helping to conceive of the master plan, the program, the mix of uses. We're working on the innovation district there. That's 1.8 million square feet of institutional innovation educational space that has nothing to do with retail. It's an economic driver for the project. Approvals, entitlements, we support that effort with the great planners of our industry. We work with the master planners. We work with the landscape architects. So we're part of the development team as a support mechanism when it comes to mixed use.
Before we get into kind of larger scale master plan communities, let's just look at like the individual condos going up in downtown areas around North America right now. What's wrong with the retail now? Like, I feel the retail can be such a great sales tool for the sales team of creating this place and placemaking. But that's not happening. You're getting kind of this, like, the retail always seems like an afterthought. What's wrong with the retail we're creating now?
So you hit the nail on the head. The first problem is that we all think of, okay, what's on the ground floor? It's the retail. Well, what is retail? It's restaurants, services, civic, cultural, entertainment, institutional. It's a whole mix of uses. But because it becomes the afterthought, the majority of the value, and again, we're not immune to this. We recognize this as a company. The value is upstairs. So how can we support our clients in the industry for driving that value upstairs? Whether you're selling a condo, renting an apartment, renting office space, you want to drive the primary value. But most developers have ignored the ground floor. So what holds up the condos upstairs? A bunch of columns that are strewn throughout the retail. How is the facade? Can you see into the retail? How does a delivery truck get to that retail to service it? Retailers are very sophisticated. And if they don't have the right size of space, the right configuration of space, it's very hard for them to do that. And now most people are probably thinking, oh yes, he's talking about grocery stores, pharmacies, LCBOs, and banks. Yes, those are one type of use. But if you build a space that is, you know, designed for a flagpole store, which is 10 feet deep and 30 feet tall, what retailer can function in there? Even a small coffee shop or a bakery or a flower shop, or the list goes on. The independent non-national retailers, in certain cases, outperform the nationals. They're very sophisticated. They're very talented. And I'm proud to now be in Toronto for 20 years. And there's been an incredible, incredible surge of great restaurants and retail shops that are not national tenants.
I always remember, I don't remember the exact story, but you'll be able to fill it in. I remember you telling me about this project you were working on, and the builder was really into the retail space, and like they hired you to have a competition. They were like, okay, we need a good bakery, but they weren't just saying, okay, let's take the bakery that's going to pay us the most. Like they did like a competition to ensure that the best bakery was going into that location. They wanted a butcher, making sure the best butcher was going into that location. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how that kind of helped the entire community?
Sure. And that actually comes from the IntroWest roots that I learned from some great people at IntroWest, which was we were not just leasing space in these resorts. We were curating, like you would in a museum, an art exhibition, curating the retail. What is the right retail? What are you looking for? Where is it? You know, at 9 o'clock in the morning, where is it sunny and you want to have your cup of coffee? And at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, when you're done your day and you want to hang out on the patio and have a beer for your cinquassette, as we used to say in Quebec, where could you do that? And so we had developed throughout my career this process of targeting the right retailer. So it wasn't just about who can, you know, putting up a sign that says for rent and let's see who comes, but it was actually about envisaging the program, the mix, looking at the economics once you'd already figured out the building, and then actually going out into the market and handpicking the best of the best operators to be a part of a project. And my fundamental belief throughout my career has been, if you've got one great tenant, fantastic. If you've got two or three of them, even better. But if you can create an entire mix of great tenants, both national and non-national, you will become unbeatable.
So talk about the importance of retail. And I know you're deep in the world of placemaking. I've got kind of two questions for you. One, what is placemaking? But two, knowing the importance of retail and placemaking and that first 50 feet, what's your thoughts on how important is architecture? You see these buildings go up and they hire a star architect and they work so hard on the entire building. Does anything actually matter beyond those first 50 feet?
So it's a great question. And it's a challenging one because you have to think about it from everyone's perspective. When you're a city builder, if you're a city, if you are a large landowner, you're trying to make a mark. And in many great cities in the world, there are things that you remember. So if you rewind the clock, the CN Tower was at its time the iconic, architectural installation of choice. The Burj Khalifa then beat it out in terms of height, and people have always been going after that. But really, if you think about the life that we all lead, certainly we live on the ground floor. We walk around the ground floor. We spend the majority of our time and money on the ground floor. And sometimes, and more we're seeing this, you choose where to live based on what happens on that ground floor 50 feet up. The challenge that I have seen in our industry, and we fixed that back in the day at IntraWest, and I certainly do that with many of our clients, is the architecture does not have to carry from the tip of the spire all the way to the ground and the asphalt. If you don't give the opportunity for those retailers to succeed, great glazing, great visibility, good ceiling heights, good access, they're going to fail. And it's not just about, oh, well, we'll just put in glass windows. There's actually an architectural vernacular, a style that carries on the ground floor that can be different than what happens upstairs that looks great. So this is not the anti-architecture talk with Matt Slutsky and Rob Spanier. It's about understanding what will work. And if you fix what isn't working, your asset overall will perform better.
From your perspective, who is doing retail really well right now?
It's a good question. I think there's a lot of people that are doing retail well around the world. I think that those that are focusing on multifamily right now are actually doing retail well. Why? Because they're long-term holders of the asset. I think those that are in the condo game that have exited the asset, meaning selling their condos, and have not really given a lot of thought to the retail, are struggling. But I'll give you a couple of good examples. I think Fitzrovia is doing a fantastic job of thinking about their ground floor and the retail that they're dealing with. I think Rockport's doing an exceptional job. You may be familiar with Stock TC, Young and Eglinton.
Love it.
Yeah, me too. And I had the privilege of working with them many years ago to help put that together. I think that if you take the perspective of the long-term value of any asset, you think very differently. If it is a short-term win, that's where the challenges begin. So there are many developers. When I moved to Toronto from Montreal, I was like, this is terrible. Why am I walking out of this condo building, 400, 500 units, in the dead of winter and have to walk around the corner to drop off my dry cleaning? How have they not thought about giving access to those customers to go get into those units? Moreover, it never felt to me like people, at least when I moved to Toronto, had really given any thought as to what was going where. I think it's getting better. I think developers are recognizing the value short and long term, but I think we have we still have some room for improvement.
That makes me think about just the world of new construction, specifically high rise, and you're building these master planned communities of high rises. And we're going to dive a bit into Downsview and Lakeview, but those are very different than the Blue Mountains of the world, where you're going for this like village aesthetic and this place and this kind of like, we look to these like European cities of these walkable cities. How do you create that village feel in a modern setting?
Sure. And first of all, I need you to recognize how hard it is to do a Blue Mountain. You didn't ask me the question if I would ever do a Blue Mountain again, which is a story for another day. But there is a built-in population around many of these projects in the GTA. So you've got the customers already. The question is, the two most valuable things people think about in life is time and money and how they choose to spend those two most valuable assets. I don't think you need to recreate Blue Mountain or a resort in the urban setting. I think you need to create the character of what the environment is. What does that mean? Not every project can look the same. There are many of these homogenous developments that have gone up in the last 25 years that have made people very, very wealthy and have given lots of housing to many people who need it, but the at-grade condition is deplorable. I think that there's an opportunity to think about the architectural vernacular on the ground floor that's urban. It doesn't have to be modern slick. If I said to you, think about Yorkville and close your eyes, you think about something. Or I say, what's the Junction like? What's Queen Street East like? Or even what's, St. Clair West like? There is an architectural vernacular of small town Ontario and urban centers and communities that have evolved. Bloor Street's very different than Yorkville Avenue. Completely different. They're just two streets apart. Scollard is different than Yorkville or Cumberland. And so people say, well, what are we going to do? I think it has to do with having the right people in the right project thinking about what the community is, was, and could be. Now, again, hats off to those people that do all the crazy things of forward thinking, like some of these architectural buildings that are iconic. I'm talking about integrated within neighborhoods and communities. And I think that that's what most municipalities struggle with developers, because you need to try to integrate that. And there's a way to do it that's not kitschy, that doesn't feel fabricated, that actually feels real, and that can work without saying, well, it's new, it's got to look shiny. My biggest fear is architecture that is not timeless at the ground floor. Because over time, you may never have a chance to fix that. These assets aren't being built like a Walmart for 20 years and then you knock it down. These are forever assets, these projects. So if you don't put a little bit of effort or a lot of effort on the front end to this fundamental asset that everyone's looking at, you're stuck with it for life.
When I think about a really unique way to create this community in a more urban, modern setting, I think of The Well. And you know, truth be told, I haven't been to The Well yet, but I've seen pictures of it. And I mean, it just looks like they are knocking it out of the park with what they created. I think it's something really unique and different. I know you didn't work on it, but can you tell us a little, like, what's your thoughts as an observer?
Sure. And a champion and a cheerleader, I think. And I think we all need to be for the project. Allied, Diamond Corp, and RioCan acquired the property and set out to create something that I think has not yet been done in Toronto, certainly in the urban core. They then brought in a partner, Tridel, to work on some of the residential and others. I think it's an exceptional development, and I think we all need to get behind it and support it, because a lot of effort and energy was put into it. And it needs to succeed because people need to take risks like that. Now, again, to take a risk like that, you have to be the likes of some of these, you know, giants and titans of industry, because their long-term view of real estate is fantastic and they have the capital to be able to do it. But I think they did an exceptional job of creating a place where there was no place, creating an environment that was weather protected, creating experiences that are interesting and attractive to the community, and integrating those uses above grade, the offices, the residential, etc. The real sneak peek on the project, and I had the privilege of touring it, is the P4 level, which is the back of house level. You can get an 18-wheeler truck underground four levels to service that project, which in most, you know, traditional projects would be impossible. So why do I say we need to support it and embrace it? Because it's a new idea. Do I think that everyone else will emulate it? Probably not. You won't see many projects of that scale and nature. But we need to support the concept of integrating uses and trying new things. And my hat goes off to everyone involved in that project, because it's an important conversation and it's an important message that things can happen. I spent my career doing things that were impossible, improbable. I came to Toronto and everyone said, we don't do it like that here. Well, welcome to 2024, and people are thinking a little bit differently and doing some really cool things.
What about, again, looking at these communities, The Well, and you know, any new project going up right now? I'm just going to stick on retail one last time. We're a city of neighborhoods, and there's different ethnicities in each neighborhood. And you know, we say we're a melting pot, but we're not. We're a mosaic of these different ethnicities. But then you have these condos coming in that are really pulling different people from different places. It's a lot of investors purchasing these units, so you don't know who's actually going to be living in there. Does that make us stuck with very cookie cutter retail options, because they don't actually know, like, you can't really have a really unique place because who knows, there's too much risk associated with it, where, you know, if you put a bank in a dry cleaner, it's going to do well.
Yeah, I am not a believer of that. I never have been. It's amazing to me how successful our industry is at selling real estate, leasing real estate, non-retail real estate, and constructing it. They know so much about the customer. They know where they need to put the toilet paper holder. They know that they know what type of dishwasher people want. Well, if you know that, who's your customer and what are they looking for? They know their age. They know their disposable income level. Why aren't you thinking about the retail? The easy answer is to say, I don't want to think about it. Let's just put whatever is in there and let the free market dictate it. My philosophy is, if you put a little effort into it, look at the neighborhood and look what's missing. What already exists there and how do you complement it? is a better solution than just jamming something else in there that can work. But more importantly, you have a built-in customer base. You have 200 to 400 units, call it 400 to 800 people upstairs that are a captive audience if you do a good job. I remember it was actually Rockport that built a building on St. Clair and aligned with a good friend of mine and yours, Ben Latchford, that owns Roast. And when every person moved into their new condo on St. Clair, they got a coupon for a discount and a free steak.
I remember that. As the first customer of Roast, I remember that well. Moving on to some of the projects you're working on right now, that I think there's two of them that you mentioned early on. I think they're extremely exciting. Although, to be honest, even as an industry person, I know very little about them other than I know there's a lot of excitement there that people don't seem to realize. So I want to start with Lakeview. Can you tell us a little bit about Lakeview? I mean, this is a massive, massive master planned high-rise community. Steps, you know, steps, but short drive from downtown Toronto. That's creating something really unique, but people don't seem to know about it. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
And I think that it's because the worlds that we live in are so close to one another, but perhaps just a little disconnected, because these projects, if they're going to work well, and I think Lakeview is going to be one of the greatest projects in Canadian history, it takes time to get these things right. Lakeview Village is located on Lake Ontario, between Dixie and Cawthra in Mississauga. We've positioned the project, and when I say we, I very humbly say I've had the privilege of working on this project since 2017 as a member of a great consulting advisory team for the Land Ownership Group. Lakeview is positioned to be Canada's most transformative waterfront development. If you really think about waterfront developments in Canada that exist, I challenge you to tell me a place. You're going to say Granville Island. Okay, sure.
I was actually going to say Friday Harbor.
Friday Harbor? Fine. And I actually had I had the opportunity to work on that one many moons ago, so I agree. But so many people can't think of a great waterfront development, and that was the idea. How do you bring the water to the development and the development to the water? The community will have, at term, 16,000 residential dwellings, 1.8 million square feet of innovation, institutional, retail, non-residential space, real innovation space. We're working on an innovation district, and over 200,000 square feet of retail, some national, some non-national, but really designed around the creation of place. Why do I think this project is exceptional? Because it's the type of community where you will have the opportunity to live or work or spend time, have a bite to eat, and welcome the world in, as opposed to it being a development or a bedroom community where you drive in, drive out to. You could do all of the things, and I believe that there will be as many visitors to this project than perhaps, it'll probably be the second to any other project in Ontario. And I did Blue Mountain, and I had, you know, there are a lot of people there. Niagara Falls, a lot of people there. I think Lakeview is going to attract people because of the diverse mix of parks, public realm, retail, restaurants, arts, culture, innovation space. I think it's got all of the mix, but it's not just those words, it's how you put them together. And the development team worked very hard, and the great group of consultants, to actually figure out how to create an incredible mixed-use development that functions well.
You know, what I find interesting about it is, if you think about a master plan, a typical master plan community of low rises, you have got the builder and then they sell lots to different builders, and it kind of makes it all seem very homogenous in their sales approach. But because this is mainly a high rise community, it's each builder launching like 400, 500, 600 units at a time in phases, right?
So it's correct.
Like, so it has already launched.
Yes. Phase one is underway. Tridel is involved in the project, has launched its first of two phases of its block. No retail there. One of the important things is this misnomer that every project can be mixed use. My favorite story is, you and I are about the same age. I used to watch the Flintstones. Did you ever watch the Flintstones?
Of course.
Perfect. So when Barney and Fred were driving to work and having their chat about whatever they were talking about, if you looked in the background, you would see house, palm tree, dinosaur. But it kept repeating because Hanna-Barbera was very smart. They just needed the same loop. Not every place can be a there, can have a heart, should have retail. Not every project should be mixed use. And we fought and worked hard to work with the city so they understood where the concentration of uses were. So there's an incredible retail village at the lakefront. There are some great neighborhood services and conveniences up on Lakeshore. There is a great phase one set of retail across from the park. And we may put in a couple destination restaurants in the Marina District. But thinking about where and how much and why is so much better. And a lot of times you'll hear me say less is more. I would rather do less retail and make it great than a ton of retail where you have a ton of vacancy and failure.
So phase one is launched as Tridel. When are the next? I don't know how involved you are in this part of the process.
Yeah, and I'm pretty familiar.
Like, when's the next phase launching? When's this whole, 16,000 units going to be completed?
Sure.
What's the timeline like?
Well, again, we're in an interesting period in the market, as we all know, with interest rates, lots of announcements and shifts within government. So the Tridel had launched almost a year and change ago. I think that if all goes well, and hopefully, like everyone's talking about, drive to 2025 or survive till 2025, however you want to say it, my sense is that by Q2 2025, those projects will launch. In a perfect world, if the market was where we were 5 years ago, this thing would sell out fast. The key is, can you deliver the infrastructure on a project to meet the needs and the timelines of the development? I think the real smart part is that there are five partners in the project, and they've also brought Tridel in as builders. They will be selling blocks the same way you talked about the subdivision, but the master plan is set, the retail is set, everything is located where it needs to be. And kudos to the Lakeview Community Partners, they're front loading a majority of the infrastructure to have the pipes, the roads, the parks ready to receive the residential. So I think that while these projects take easily 20 years or more to develop, Downsview will take 30 plus years. I think the way that they're developing it, it's going to make it go fast.
Okay, so Downsview, I mean, I think everybody in Toronto knows where Downsview is. It's like, there's a weird airport there. It's North America's largest urban park or something. Like, it's all these weird things with Downsview, but it is slowly turning into residential as well. And then in addition to that, there's this master planned Downsview project that you're working on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Now, again, Downsview, the Bombardier lands that was that airstrip with where a lot of planes were built, recently shut down and relocated to closer to Pearson Airport. And that was a strategic transition plan for Bombardier. And there were bidders for the land. And the winner of that bid was PSP, which is a pension fund from Quebec, Montreal, my hometown. And they set up a development company called Northcrest that's being led by a good friend of mine, Derek Goring, and a great team of development-minded people that they've assembled, and they're building the project. It's not just residential and some retail and public realm. They are doing a true mixed-use community. The thing that's so fascinating about Downsview is if you flew up in Norm Lee's helicopter to take an aerial photo, it's the hole in the donut of the greater Toronto area. And someone really smart said to me, could this become the downtown of the GTA? Because it is adjacent to the 401, close to the 400, close to the 404. It's right at the center of everything, and it has the potential to be something. Now, that's a great grand vision. In the micro, in the immediate, Bathurst Manor, which sits just east of Dufferin/the Allen Road, has never had their own little place, no downtown. Major arterials, but nowhere to go. And Yorkdale sits just south of it. So recognizing that Yorkdale is one of the highest performing and most successful malls, another podcast we should talk about how great they did on changing Yorkdale into an incredible destination, which will also future have residential. How do you make this a real neighborhood, a community, a place? There are many anchors, the movie studios, Downsview Park, but we've been working with the team over the last 4 years to help ensure that when this project arrives and starts to sell, it will meet it with a quality of expectation of the highest standard of great place and placemaking. And so you mentioned this word, and we sort of didn't talk about it, placemaking. I like the word place because placemaking has so many different definitions arts and culture is placemaking, a park is placemaking, retail is placemaking. I really think about in the work that I do and our team does, how do you create a place? What does it feel? And in the real estate world and today, mixed use is the new norm. How do you create an environment where people can, and not can, but choose to spend their two most valuable resources, time and money? And where do they want to do that? I think Downsview and Lakeview, when completed, as long as it all goes according to the master plan, I think that those will become two incredible neighborhood destinations. The way you say Toronto is a city of neighborhoods, these are two other neighborhoods. Downsview, a neighborhood of Toronto, Mississauga, a neighborhood of Mississauga, but in the GTA, two projects that are ones to watch.
So when is Downsview coming to fruition? When are we going to see things start to happen?
Sure. So the keys were just handed over in 2024 to Northcrest from Bombardier. So they now have control of the site. They've been going through an extensive engagement, outreach, community process and approvals and entitlement process with the city. They've just chosen a partner in the first phase, which is the Hangar District, which includes the old historic million square feet where the planes were built that's going to be integrated into this first neighborhood with incredible uses. Don't just think industrial. This is actually modern day industrial. The making of things, office space, really interesting things that we're thinking about, tied into a really cool retail hub, tied into residential, new office, hotel. So if all goes well through the approvals process, which is the priority, Hines and Northcrest should be hopefully getting in on the move over the next couple of years. And so we should see something in the 2020s, something, I would hope.
There was a whole discussion I wanted to have with you around shopping malls, and you kind of briefly touched upon it there, but I think that could be an entire podcast on its own. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the show. Really appreciated everything you had to say. I think it's fascinating stuff, and no doubt there will be another a part two coming up sometime in the future where we dive more into those issues. So thank you very much, Rob.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to many more.
Thank you for tuning into Livable Launch, your go-to podcast for all things condo and new home launches. We hope today's episode has given you valuable insights into the exciting world of real estate development and the minds behind these remarkable projects. We're incredibly grateful to our esteemed guests and our dedicated listeners like you who continue to make this podcast a success. Remember, Livable Launch is here to keep you informed, inspired, and engaged with the ever-evolving landscape of condo and new home developments. We value your feedback and want to ensure that Livable Launch remains your trusted source of information. So don't hesitate to reach out. Remember, we're all in this exciting journey together. If you have any questions or suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear from you. Connect with us on our website or social media platforms. And if you're a builder industry expert who wants to share your expertise and be featured on our show, please get in touch. We'd love to hear about your latest project launches and insights. Thank you again for joining us on Livable Launch. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Stay up to date with the latest condo and new home launches, trends, and insider knowledge. Until next time, keep building, dreaming, and exploring the world of real estate. Remember, Livable Launch is here to guide you for every step of the way. I'm Matthew Slutsky, and this is Livable Launch signing off. Happy building, and see you soon.